and welcome to InfoTech Research Group's monthly threat landscape briefing. We use these briefings to cover current topics related to cybersecurity, such as threat actor campaigns, regulatory compliance and legal issues, and exploitation methods and tactics being used by today's cybercriminals.
For this month's briefing, we start with research analyst Logan Rohde on countering cybersecurity attacks through accountability. Then we hear from research analyst Michelle Tran about how industrial control system vulnerabilities are on the rise. Then we will hear from research director William Wong about the punishment of staff for cybersecurity errors. And finally, we hear from senior research analyst Cassandra Cooper about NYDFS's reinforcement of the relevance of cybersecurity regulations. Without further ado, let's begin.
Determining accountability for security tasks is an essential component of an organization's overall governance. Nevertheless, this process is often a challenge for organizations and their staff. In a recent article, Dr. Watson Williams rethinks accountability from a personal perspective in order to improve organizational cybersecurity outcomes. She argues that too often, the individuals that make up a security team approach issues of accountability by asking questions that begin with why, when, and who, which she sees as prone to a victim-blaming mentality because they hinge on a reactive assessment of accountability. In other words, these are the questions that come up after the fact, when it is too late to take preventative actions. Accountability thus becomes a process of determining who let it happen, when, and why there wasn't a control in place to prevent the incident, or, at the very least, why was that control ignored? The victim organization is forced into blaming its own personnel for the misdeeds of someone else. However, Watson Williams believes this mentality can be overcome using John G. Miller's question before the question principle. She suggests that behind each of those W questions is a how or a what question, and that by considering such questions, we can develop a sense of personal accountability towards cybersecurity. One might even say it looks a lot like duty. The following are examples of the types of questions she has in mind. What can I do to keep my organization secure? How can I contribute to security solutions? What strategy, plan, tactic, process, tool, and techniques do I have to prevent a security breach? How can I serve the organization by adhering to cyber threat policies? How can I campaign for cybersecurity while building a relationship with my colleagues in the organization? Pursuing questions like these, she argues, will lead to benefits that include intellectual growth, reduced complaining and excuse-making, contingency planning and preparedness, service-oriented mentality, as well as strengthen relationships overall. The spirit of Dr. Watson Williams' argument is admirable in that it puts the impetus on the individual to take accountability for things one otherwise might not, like proactively doing what one can to improve a cybersecurity program, which might more commonly be passed off to a manager or director. However, refocusing accountability to a personal level should be seen as a gateway to more practical accountability, which takes shape through governance mechanisms, such as RACI charts, policies, or role definitions. If there is not a culture of accountability within the organization, there is often a resistance for individuals to accept accountability and responsibility, sometimes preferring to think of an entire team or department as the accountable party. For this reason, I see Dr. Watson Williams' inference as speaking to a larger organizational culture shift that needs to happen so that we can return to questions like who, when, and why, which continue to be important in, for example, an incident response situation, even if they shift accountability's focus unhelpfully outside those situations.
In the most recent release of the inaugural Clarity Biannual ICS Risk and Vulnerability Report, industrial control system vulnerabilities disclosed publicly in the first half of 2020 were further analyzed. Overall, the National Vulnerability Database, NVD, disclosed 365 vulnerabilities that affected ICS products from 53 vendors, which included Siemens, Schneider Electric, and Wago. Of these vulnerabilities, more than 75% of those vulnerabilities were assigned high or critical CVSS scores, summing to an overall 10.3% year-over-year increase in the number of ICS vulnerabilities disclosed compared to 2019. For more information on the report, click on the link below To secure OT networks and ICS devices end-to-end, incorporate these security recommendations into your security strategy so that your organization is not easily targeted. 1. Employ multi-factor authentication to provide an additional layer of security with emphasis on high-risk environments that involve remote access and access to information that is sensitive. 2. Consider segmenting your network to limit both the communication throughout your network and the number of options available for access. 3. Establish end-user training to inform employees on proper email use and web usage, highlighting techniques on identifying phishing emails. 4. Guard against single-point failures throughout your network by regularly updating firewalls and deploying gateway, antivirus, intrusion detection systems, and website vulnerability malware protection. And lastly, 5. Ensure devices are encrypted and support security patches by manufacturers and vendors.
Over 40% of organizations punish staff for cybersecurity errors. Research conducted by CybSafe revealed that 42% of organizations participating in a survey of cybersecurity awareness professionals, as well as an experimental lab study, found that punishment continues to be a popular tool amongst UK businesses. The survey found that the punishment varied in severity and were often focused at those who failed phishing simulations. Punishment type ranges included the use of name and shame of employees, decreased access privileges, reporting the incident to the line managers, and locking the employees' computers until appropriate training had been completed. Further, in a lab-based experiment, CybSafe researchers found that punishing staff for cybersecurity mistakes was not necessarily and actually detrimental in terms of decreased productivity and increased anxiety levels. The real question is, does it actually improve an organization's security posture? Short answer is yes and no. If an organization has failed to implement a proper security awareness program, if the organization has failed to include the use of systems content in a corporate acceptable use policy, and if they fail to implement technology to actually reduce cyber threats to minimize or eliminate the threat, then they are just as guilty as the staff they are punishing. Does that actually improve an organization's security posture? The short answer is yes and no. If an organization has failed to implement a proper security awareness program, or if the organization has failed to include the use of systems content in a corporate acceptable use policy, or if they fail to implement technology to actually reduce cyber threats to minimize or eliminate the threat, then they are all just as guilty as the staff that they are punishing. Alternative approaches could be in the form of a carrot-type incentive, meaning an employee merit or incentive pay is actually tied to good cybersecurity practices where they are reviewed at the end of a cycle, or have a formal one-on-one discussion with their direct manager to discuss improvement actions. Organizations should also consult their HR department or partner on how to best address repeat offenders.
On July 21st, the New York Department of Financial Services filed its statement of charges, one of which did not go unnoticed. First American Financial, which is one of the United States' largest title insurers, was charged due to the company's failure to implement adequate cybersecurity standards, and this resulted in a data breach that exposed sensitive personal and non-public information of hundreds of millions of the company's clients and customers. This included social security numbers, bank account information, as well as other personally identifiable information. The breach itself is not news and occurred due to a misclassified vulnerability that was initially identified during penetration testing, yet not properly dealt with internally. This was due to what's been deemed a series of administrative errors. In 2019, journalist Brian Krebs made the breach public by exposing First American's failure to uphold the necessary cybersecurity standards to the public. So why the fuss now? In 2017, the New York Department of Financial Services enacted and enforced what was known as 23 NYCRR 500, or a set of cybersecurity standards spanning 23 specific sections that define the set of necessary standards for a company within the financial services industry to implement and uphold. These range from strategic governance, including the appointment of a CISO, development of a cybersecurity program and cybersecurity policies, to more technical guidelines around access privileges, data retention protocols, as well as multi-factor authentication. The New York Department of Financial Services has found First American to be in violation of 6 separate sections of the document's rules, and should the October court ruling not err in favor of the financial services company, First American may well face hefty fines. The lesson here? Cybersecurity programs cannot function in isolation and must be adopted to meet the growing complexities that a rapid pace of technological advancement introduces. The stringent nature of the 23 NYCRR 500 is not unique. Recent privacy laws, including the European Union's GDPR, or General Data Protection Regulation, as well as California's CCPA, place an increased level of ownership on companies to ensure that the information they hold and the data that they collect is safe, specifically when it comes to the information of individuals. Failing to assess risk of vulnerability, such as the one that was identified within First American, around access control with a document management system, is not a minor operating risk and cannot be swept under the rug. To take the appropriate steps to ensure your organization isn't the next First American, consider the following. Empower your cybersecurity team. The creation of a cybersecurity program emphasizes a need for separate accountability and ownership of both the technical and process-specific measures that are foundational to the protection of information assets. Second, implement effective governance. A cybersecurity program necessitates supervision and oversight in order to ensure that it aligns with the organization's business and compliance drivers. And finally, adapt and update. The global technology landscape is dynamic, and so are the relevant cybersecurity frameworks that enables organizations to adopt new technologies while continuing to ensure that the core information assets are protected and secured. Compliance is just one driver for organizations to continue to update their cybersecurity program. Regardless or not of whether your company operates within the financial services sphere, an effective cybersecurity program is absolutely a must.
This concludes this month's briefing. If you have any questions about what you've heard, want to learn more, or need any support, please do not hesitate to contact us and set up an analyst call. Thank you, and see you next month.